I can still hear the words framing the rebellion for it all. Strength, power, death, Maven murmurs, his teeth clicking. The words scared me then, and they terrify me now. What do you suggest, my lady? A beheading? A firing squad? Do we take her apart, piece by piece? My heart gallops in my chest. Would Maven allow such a thing? I don't know. I don't know what he would do. I have to remind myself, I don't even know him. The boy I thought him to be was an illusion. But the notes, brutally left, but full of pleas for me to return? The month of quiet, gentle captivity? Perhaps those were false, too, another trick to ensnare me, another kind of torture. We do as the law requires, as your father would have done. The way she says father, using the word as brutally as she would any knife, is confirmation enough. Like so many people in this room, she knows Tiberius the Sixth did not end the way the stories say. Still, Maven grips his throne, white-knuckling the gray slabs. He glances at the court, feeling their eyes upon him, before sneering back at Evangeline. Not only are you not a member of my council, but you did not know my father well enough to know his mind. I am a king as he was, and I understand the things that must be done for victory. Our laws are sacred, but we are fighting two wars now. Two wars. Adrenaline pulses through me so quickly, I think my lightning has returned. No, not lightning. Hope. I bite my lip to keep from grinning. Weeks into my captivity, the Scarlet Guard continues and thrives. Not only are they still fighting, but Maven admits it openly. They are impossible to hide or dismiss now. Despite the need to know more, I keep my mouth shut. Maven burns a stare through Evangeline. No enemy prisoner, especially not one as valuable as Mare Barrow, should be wasted on common execution. You waste her still, Evangeline argues, firing back so quickly I know she must have practiced for this argument. She takes a few more steps forward, closing the distance between herself and Maven. It all seems a show, an act, something played out on the platform for the court to witness. But for whose benefit? She sits collecting dust, doing nothing, giving us nothing, while Corvium burns. Another jewel of information to keep close. More, Evangeline. Give me more. I saw the fortress city, the heart of the Norton military, erupt in riots with my own eyes a month ago. It's still happening. Mention of Corvium sobers the crowd. Maven does not miss it, and he fights to keep his calm. The council is days away from a decision, my lady, he says through gritted teeth. Forgive my boldness, your majesty. I know you wish to honor your council as best you can, even the weakest parts of it, even the cowards who cannot do what must be done. Another step closer, and her voice softens to a purr. But you are the king. The decision is yours. Masterful, I realize. Evangeline is just as adept at manipulation as any other. In a few words, she's not only saved Maven from appearing weak, but also forced him to follow her will to maintain an image of strength. In spite of myself, I draw in a harried breath. Will he do as she bids, or will he refuse, throwing fuel on the fire of insurrection already blazing through the high houses? Maven is no fool. He understands what Evangeline is doing, and he keeps his focus on her. They hold each other's gaze, communicating with forced smiles and sharp eyes. Queen's trial certainly did bring forth the most talented daughter, he says, taking her hand. Both of them look disgusted by the action. His head snaps to the crowd, looking to a lean man in dark blue. Cousin, your petition of interrogation is granted. Samson Miranda snaps to attention and emerges from the crowd, clear-eyed. He bows, almost grinning. Blue robes billow, dark as smoke. Thank you, your majesty. No. The word wrenches itself from me. No, Maven. Samson moves quickly, ascending the platform with controlled fury. He closes the distance between us in a few determined strides, until his eyes are the only thing in my world, Blue eyes, Ilara's eyes, Maven's eyes. Maven, I gasp again, begging even though it will do nothing. Begging even though it burns my pride to think I'm asking him for anything. But what else is there to do? Samson is a whisper. He'll destroy me from the inside out, search everything I am, everything I know. How many people will die because of what I've seen? Maven, please, don't let him do this. I'm not strong enough to break Kitten's grasp on my chain, or even struggle much when Trio seizes my shoulders. Both of them hold me in place with ease. My eyes flash from Samson to Maven. One hand on his throne, one hand in Evangeline's. I miss you, his notes said. He is unreadable, but at least he's looking. Good. If he won't save me from this nightmare, I want him to see it happen. Maven, I whisper one last time, trying to sound like myself. Not the Lightning Girl, not Marina, the lost princess, but Mare, the girl he watched through the bars of a cell and pledged to save. But that girl isn't enough. He drops his eyes. He looks away. I am alone. Samson takes my throat in his hand, squeezing above the metal collar, forcing me to look into his wretched, familiar eyes, blue as ice and just as unforgiving. You were wrong to kill Ilara, he says, not bothering to temper his words. She was a surgeon with mines. He leans in, hungry, a starving man about to devour a meal. I am a butcher. When the sounder device leveled me, I wallowed in agony for 3 long days. A storm of radio waves turned my own electricity against me. It resounded in my skin, rattling between my nerves like bolts in a jar. It left scars, jagged lines of white flesh down my neck and spine, ugly things that I'm still not used to. They twinge and tug at odd angles, making benign movements painful. Even my smiles are tainted, smaller in the wake of what was done to me. Now, I would beg for it if I could. The screeching click of a sounder as it peels me apart would be a heaven, a bliss, a mercy. I would rather be broken in bone and muscle, shattered down to teeth and fingernails, obliterated in every inch, than suffer another second of Samson's whispers. I can feel him, his mind filling up my corners like a corruption or a rot or a cancer. He scrapes inside my head with sharp skin and even sharper intentions. Any part of me not taken by his poison writhes in pain. He enjoys doing this to me. This is his revenge, after all, for what I did to Ilara, his blood and his queen. She was the first memory he tore from me. My lack of remorse incensed him, and I regret it now. I wish I could have forced some sympathy, but the image of her death was too frightening for much more than shock. I remember it now. He forces me to. In an instant of blinding pain, sucking me backward through my memories, I find myself back in the moment I killed her. My ability draws lightning out of the sky in ragged lines of purple-white. One strikes her head-on, cascading into her eyes and mouth, down her neck and arms, from fingers to toes and back again. The sweat on her skin boils to steam. Her flesh chars until it smokes, and the buttons on her jacket turn red hot, burning through cloth and skin. She jerks, tearing at herself, trying to be rid of my electric rage. Her fingertips rip clean, exposing bone, while the muscles of her beautiful face go slack, drooping from the relentless pull of jumping currents. Ash-white hair burns black and smolders, disintegrating. And the smell? The sound. She screams until her vocal cords pull apart. Samson makes sure the scene passes slowly, his ability manipulating the forgotten memory until every second brands itself into my conscience. A butcher indeed. His rage sends me spinning with nothing to cling to, caught in a storm I cannot control. All I can do is pray not to see what Samson is searching for. I try to keep Shade's name from my thoughts, but the walls I put up are little more than paper. Samson rips through them gleefully. I feel each one being torn away, another part of me mangled. He knows what I'm trying to keep from him, to never live through again. He chases through my thoughts, faster than my brain, outrunning every weak attempt to stop him. I try to scream or beg, but no sound comes from my mouth or mind. He holds everything in the palm of his hand.
Too easy.
His voice echoes in me, around me. Like Ilara's ending, Shade's death is captured in perfect, painful detail. I must relive every awful second in my own body, unable to do anything but watch, trapped inside myself. Radiation tangs the air. Koros Prison is on the edge of the wash, close to the nuclear wasteland forming our southern border. Cold mist shrouds morning against a gray dawn. For a moment, all is still, suspended in balance. I stare out, unmoving, frozen mid-step. The prison yawns at my back, still shuddering with the riot we began. Prisoners and pursuers bleed from its gates, following us to freedom, or something like it. Cal is already gone, his familiar form 100 yards away. I made Shade jump him first, to protect one of our only pilots and our only manner of escape. Killorn is still with me, frozen as I am, his rifle tucked against his shoulder. He aims behind us, at Queen Ilara, her guards, and Ptolemy Samos. A bullet explodes from the muzzle, born of sparks and gunpowder. It, too, hangs in midair, waiting for Samson to release his grip on my mind. Overhead, the sky swirls, heavy with electricity. My own power. The feel of it would make me cry if I could. The memory begins to move, slowly at first. Ptolemy forges himself a long, gleaming needle in addition to the many weapons already at hand. The perfect edge glitters with red and silver blood, each droplet a gemstone warbling through the air. Despite her ability, Ara Iral is not fast enough to dodge its lethal arc. It slices through her neck in one lingering second. She falls a few feet away from me, sluggishly, as if through water. Ptolemy means to kill me in the same motion, using the momentum of his blow to turn the needle on my heart. Instead, he finds my brother in the way. Shade jumps back to us to teleport me to safety. His body materializes from thin air, first his chest and head, then his extremities paint into existence, hands outstretched, eyes focused, his attention only on me. He doesn't see the needle. He doesn't know he's about to die. It was not Ptolemy's intent to kill Shade, but he doesn't mind doing it. Another enemy dead makes no difference to him. Just another obstacle in his war. Another body with no name and no face. How many times have I done the same thing? He probably doesn't even know who Shade is. Was. I know what comes next, but no matter how hard I try, Samson won't let me shut my eyes. The needle pierces my brother with clean grace, through muscle and organ, blood and heart. Something in me erupts, and the sky responds. As my brother falls, so does my rage. But I never feel the bittersweet release of it. The lightning never strikes the earth, killing Ilara and scattering her guards as it should. Samson never allows me that small mercy. Instead, he pulls the scene backward. Again, it plays. Again, my brother dies. Again. Again. Each time he forces me to see something else. A mistake. A misstep. A choice I could have made to save him. Small decisions. Step here. Turn there. Run a bit faster. It is torture of the worst kind.
Look what you did. Look what you did. Look what you did.
His voice ripples all around me. Other memories splinter through Shade's death, visions bleeding into one another. Each plays on a different fear or weakness. There's the tiny corpse I found in Templin, a red baby murdered by Maven's new blood hunters at Maven's command. In another instant, Farley's fist connects with my face. She screams horrible things, blaming me for Shade's death, while her own anguish threatens to consume her. Steaming tears run down Cal's cheeks as a sword trembles in his hand, the blade edged against his father's neck. Shade's meager grave on Tuck, alone beneath the autumn sky. The silver officers I electrocuted in Koros, in Harbor Bay, men and women who were only following orders. They had no choice. No choice. I remember all the death, all the heartache, the look on my sister's face when an officer broke her hand, Killorn's bleeding knuckles when he found out he was going to be conscripted, my brothers taken to war, my father returning from the front, half a man in mind and body, exiling himself to a rickety wheelchair, and a life apart from us. My mother's sad eyes when she told me she was proud of me. A lie now. And finally the sick ache, the hollow truth that dogged every moment of my old life, that I was ultimately doomed. I still am. Samson sweeps through it all with abandon. He pulls me through useless memories, drawn up only to subject me to more pain. Shadows jump through the thoughts, moving images behind every painful moment. Samson spools through them, too fast for me to truly grasp, but I gather enough. The colonel's face, his scarlet eye, his lips forming words I can't hear. But surely Samson can. This is what he's looking for. Intelligence. Secrets he can use to crush the rebellion. I feel like an egg with a cracked shell, slowly seeping my innards. He pulls whatever he wants from me. I don't even have the ability to feel ashamed at what else he finds. Night spent curled against Cal, forcing Cameron to join our cause. Stolen moments, rereading Maven's sickening notes. Memories of who I thought the Forgotten Prince was. My cowardice. My nightmares. My mistakes. Every selfish step I took that led me here. Look what you did. Look what you did. Look what you did. Maven will know it all soon enough. This was always what he wanted. The words, scrawled in his looping hand, burned through my thoughts. I miss you. Until we meet again.
4. Cameron. I still can't believe we survived. I dream about it sometimes. Watching them drag Mare away, her body held tightly between a pair of gigantic strong arms. They were gloved against her lightning, not that she tried to use it after she made her bargain. Her life for ours. I didn't expect King Maven to follow through, not with his exiled brother on the line. But he kept his deal. He wanted her more than the rest. Still, I wake up from the usual nightmares, afraid he and his hunters have returned to kill us. The snores from the rest of my bunk room chased the thoughts away. They told me the new headquarters was a bleeding ruin, but I expected something more like Tuck, a once-abandoned facility, isolated but functional, rebuilt in secret with all the amenities a burgeoning rebellion might need. I hated Tuck on sight. The block barracks and guard-like soldiers, even if they were red, reminded me too much of Koros Prison. I saw the island as another jail, another cell I was being forced into, this time by Mayor Barrow instead of a silver officer. But at least on Tuck I had the sky above me, a clean breeze in my lungs. Compared to Koros, compared to Newtown, compared to this, Tuck was a reprieve. Now I shiver with the rest in the concrete tunnels of Arabel. A scarlet guard stronghold on the outskirts of the Lakelander city of trial. The walls feel frozen to the touch, and icicles dangle from rooms without a heat source. A few of the guard officers have taken to following Cal around, if only to take advantage of his radiating warmth. I do the opposite, avoiding his lumbering presence as best I can. I have no use for the Silver Prince, who looks at me with nothing but accusation, as if I could have saved her. My barely trained ability was nowhere near enough, and you weren't enough either, your bleeding highness. I want to snap at him every time we cross paths. His flame was no match for the king and his hunters. Besides, Mare offered the trade and made her choice. If he's angry at anyone, it should be her. The Lightning Girl did it to save us, and for that I am always thankful. Even if she was a self-centered hypocrite, she doesn't deserve what's happening to her. The Colonel gave the order to evacuate Tuck the moment we were able to radio back to him. He knew any interrogation of Mayor Barrow would lead directly to the island. Farley was able to get everyone to safety, either in boats or the massive cargo jet stolen from the prison. We were forced to travel overland ourselves, hightailing from the crash site to rendezvous with the Colonel across the border. I say forced because, once again, I was told what to do and where to go. We had been flying to the choke in an attempt to rescue a legion of child soldiers. My brother was one of them. But our mission had to be abandoned. For now, they told me every time I got enough courage to refuse another step away from the war front. The memory makes my cheeks burn. I should have kept going. They wouldn't have stopped me, couldn't have stopped me. But I was afraid. So close to the trench line, I realized what it meant to march alone. I would have died in vain. Still, I can't shake the shame of that choice. I walked away and left my brother yet again. It took weeks for everyone to reunite. Farley and her officers arrived last of all. I think her father, the Colonel, spent every day she was gone pacing the frigid halls of our new base. At the very least, Barrow's making her imprisonment useful. The distraction of such a prisoner, not to mention the boiling mess of Corvium, has stalled any troop movements around the choke. My brother is safe. Well, as safe as a 15-year-old can possibly be with a gun and a uniform. Safer than Mare certainly is. I don't know how many times I've seen King Maven's address. Cal took over a corner of the control room to play it again and again once we arrived. The first time we saw it, I don't think any of us dared to breathe. We all feared the worst. We thought we were about to watch Mare lose her head. Her brothers were beside themselves, fighting tears. And Killorn couldn't even look, hiding his face in his hands. When Maven declared execution was too good for her, I think Bree actually fainted in relief. But Cal looked on in deafening silence, his brows knit together in focus. Deep down he knew, like we all did, that something much worse than death waited for Mayor Barrow. She knelt before a silver king and stood still while he put a collar around her throat. Said nothing, did nothing. Let him call her a terrorist and murderer before the eyes of our entire nation. Part of me wishes she'd snapped, but I know she couldn't put a toe out of line. She just glared at everyone around her, eyes sweeping back and forth between the silvers crowding her platform. They all wanted to get close to her, hunters around a trophy kill. In spite of the crown, Maven didn't look so kingly. Tired, maybe sick, definitely angry. Probably because the girl next to him had just murdered his mother. He tugged at Mare's collar, forced her to walk inside. She managed one last look over her shoulder, eyes wide and searching. But another tug turned her around for good, and we haven't seen her face since. She's been there, and I've been here, rotting, freezing, spending my days rewiring equipment older than I am, all of it a bleeding waste. I still one last minute in my bunk to think about my brother, where he might be, what he's doing. Maury. My twin in nothing but appearance. He was a soft boy in the hard alleys of Newtown, constantly sick from the factory smoke. I don't want to imagine what military training has done to him. Depending on who you ask, techie workers were either too valuable or too weak for the army. Until the Scarlet Guard started their meddling, killed a few silvers, and forced the old king into some meddling of his own. We were both conscripted, even though we had jobs, even though we were only 15. The bloody measures enacted by Cal's own father changed everything. We were selected, told to be soldiers, and we were marched away from our parents. They split us up almost immediately. My name was on some list and his wasn't. Once, I was grateful I was the one sent to Koros. Maury would have never survived the cells. Now I wish we could trade places. Him free and me on the lines. But no matter how many times I petition the colonel for another attempt at the Little Legion, he always turns me away. So I might as well ask again. The tool belt is a familiar weight around my hips, thunking with every step. I walk with purpose, enough to deter anyone who might bother to stop me. But for the most part, the halls are empty. No one is around to watch me stalk past, gnawing on a breakfast roll. More captains and their units must be out on patrol again, scouting trial in the border. Looking for Reds, I think, the ones lucky enough to make it north. Some come here to join up, but they're always of military age or workers with skills useful to the cause. I don't know where the families are sent, the orphans, the widows, the widowers, the ones who would only be in the way. Like me, but I get underfoot on purpose. It's the only way to get any kind of attention. The colonel's broom closet, I mean office, is one floor above the bunk rooms. I don't bother to knock, trying the doorknob instead. It turns easily, opening into a grim, cramped room with concrete walls, a few locked cabinets, and a currently occupied desk. "He's over in control," Farley says, not looking up from her papers. Her hands are ink-stained, and there are even smudges on her nose and under her bloodshot eyes. She pores over what look like guard communications, coded messages and orders. From command, I know, remembering the constant whispers about the upper levels of the Scarlet Guard. No one knows much about them, least of all me. Nobody tells me anything unless I ask a dozen times. I frown at her appearance. Despite the table hiding her stomach, her condition has begun to show. Her face and fingers look swollen, not to mention the three plates piled with food scraps. "Probably a good idea to sleep now and then, Farley."
"Probably."
She seems annoyed by my concern. "Fine, don't listen." With a low sigh, I turn back to the doorway, putting her behind me.
"Let him know Corvium is on the edge,"
Farley adds, her voice strong and cutting, in order, but also something else. I glance over my shoulder at her, an eyebrow raised. "Edge of what?"
"There have been riots, sporadic reports of silver officers turning up dead, and ammunition depots have developed a nasty habit of exploding."
She almost smirks at that. Almost. I haven't seen her smile since Shade Barrow died. "Sounds like familiar work. Is the Scarlet Guard in the city?" Finally, she looks up.
"Not to our knowledge."
"Then the legions are turning." Hope flares sharp and raw in my chest. "They're Red soldiers.
There's thousands of them stationed at Corvium. And more than a few have realized they substantially outnumber their silver officers. 4-1, at least."
4-1. Just like that, my hope sours. I've seen what silvers are and what they can do firsthand. I've been their prisoner and their opponent, able to fight only because of my own ability. 4 reds against a single silver is still suicide, still an outright loss. But Farley doesn't seem to agree. She senses my unease and softens as best she can. like a razor turning into a knife. Your brother isn't in the city. The Dagger Legion is still behind the lines of the Choke. Stuck between a minefield and a city on fire. Fantastic. It's not Mori that I'm worried about. At the moment. I just don't see how they can expect to take the city. They might have the numbers, but the Silvers are... Well, they're Silvers. A few dozen magnetrons could kill hundreds without blinking. I picture Corvium in my head. I've only seen it in brief videos, snippets taken from Silver broadcasts, or report footage filtered down through the Scarlet Guard. It's more fortress than city, walled with foreboding black stone, a monolith looking north to the barren wastes of war. Something about it reminds me of the place I reluctantly called home. Newtown had walls of its own, and so many officers overseeing our lives. We were thousands, too, but our only rebellions were being late to shift or sneaking out after curfew. There was nothing to be done. Our lives were weak and meaningless as smoke. Farley turns back to her work. Just tell him what I said. He'll know what to do. I can only nod, shutting the door as she tries and fails to hide a yawn. Have to recalibrate the video receivers. Captain Farley's orders. The two guardsmen flanking the door to central control step back before I even finish my sentence, my usual lie. Both look away, avoiding my gaze, and I feel my face burn with an ashamed flush. New Bloods scare people as much as Silvers do, if not more so. Reds with abilities are just as unpredictable, just as powerful, just as dangerous in their eyes. After we first got here and more soldiers arrived, the whispers about me and the others spread like disease. The old woman can change her face. The twitchy one can surround you with illusions. The techie girl can kill you with thought alone. It feels terrible to be feared. And worst of all, I can't blame anyone for it. We are different and strange, with powers not even Silvers can claim. We are frayed wires and glitching machines, still learning ourselves and our abilities. Who knows what we might become? I swallow the familiar discomfort and step into the next room. Central control usually buzzes with screens and communication equipment, but for now the room is oddly quiet. Only a single broadcaster whirs, spitting out a long strip of correspondence paper printed with a decrypted message. The colonel stands over the machine, reading as the strip lengthens. His usual ghosts, Mayor's brothers, sit close by, both of them jumpy as rabbits. And the fourth occupant of the room is all I need to know about whatever report is coming in. This is news of Mayor Barrow. Why else would Cal be here, too? He broods, as usual, his chin resting on interlocked fingers. Long days underground have taken their toll, paling his already pale skin. For a prince, he really lets himself go in times of crisis. Right now he looks like he needs a shower and a shave, not to mention a few well-aimed slaps to wake him out of his stupor. But he's a soldier still. His eyes snap to mine before the others. Cameron, he says, doing his best not to growl. Kalor? He's an exiled prince at best. No need for titles, unless I really want to piss him off. Like father, like daughter. Colonel Farley doesn't look up from the communication, but he acknowledges me with a dramatic sigh. Let's save ourselves some time, Cameron. I have neither the manpower nor the opportunity to attempt rescuing an entire legion. I mouth the words along with him. He says them to me almost every day. A legion of barely trained children whom Maven will slaughter once given the opportunity. I counter.
So you keep reminding me. Because you need to be reminded,
sir. I add, almost wincing at the word.
Sir. I'm not oathed to the guard, no matter how much they treat me like a member of their club.
The colonel's eyes narrow in on part of the message.
She's been interrogated.
Cal stands so quickly he knocks over his chair.
Mirandis?
A tremor of heat pulses through the room, and I feel a ripple of sickness in me. Not because of Cal, but because of Mare. Because of the horrors happening to her. Upset, I knit my hands together behind my head, pulling the curly dark hair at the nape of my neck.
Yes, the colonel replies. A man named Samson.
The prince curses quite colorfully for a royal.
What does that mean?
Bree, Mare's burly eldest brother, dares to ask. Trey me, the other surviving Barrow son, frowns deeply.
Mirandis is the queen's house. Whispers, mind readers, they'll pull her apart to find us.
And for sport. Cal murmurs with a low rumble. Both Barrow brothers flush red at the implication. Bree blinks back fierce, sudden tears. I want to take his arm, but I stay still. I've seen enough people flinch away from my touch.
Which is why Mare knows nothing of our operations outside Tuck, and Tuck has been thoroughly left behind,
the colonel says quickly. It's true. They abandoned Tuck with blinding speed, casting off anything that Mare Barrel knew of. Even the silvers we captured from Koros, or rescued, depending on who you ask, were left at the coast. Too dangerous to keep hold of, too many to control. I've only been with the Scarlet Guard a month, but I already know their words by heart. Rise, red as the dawn, of course, and know only what you need. The first is a battle cry, the second a warning.
Whatever she gives them will be peripheral at best,
he adds.
Nothing important about command, and little about our dealings outside Norda.
No one cares, Colonel. I bite my tongue to keep from snapping at him. Mare is a prisoner. So what if they don't get anything about the Lakelands, Piedmont, or Montfort? Montfort, the distant nation ruled by a so-called democracy. An equal balance of reds, silvers, and new bloods. A paradise? Maybe, but I have long since learned that paradise does not exist in this world. I probably know more about the country than Mare now. What with the twins, Rash and Tahir, always squawking about Montfort's merits. I'm not stupid enough to trust their word. Not to mention it's pure torture holding a conversation with them, always finishing each other's thoughts and sentences. Sometimes I want to use my silence on them both to sever the ability that binds their thoughts into one. But that would be cruel, not to mention idiotic. People are already wary of us without watching New Blood's ability bicker.
Does what they get out of her really matter right now?
I force through gritted teeth. Hopefully the colonel understands what I'm trying to say.
At least spare her brothers this, colonel. Have some shame.
He just blinks. One good eye and one destroyed.
If you can't stomach intelligence, then don't come to control. We need to know what they got out of her in interrogation.
Samson Mirandis is an arena fighter, though he has no reason to be. Cal says in a low voice, trying to be gentle. He enjoys using his ability to inflict pain. If he is the one to interrogate Mare, then... He stumbles over the words, reluctant to speak. It'll be torture, plain and simple. Maven has given her to a torturer. Even the colonel looks disturbed by the thought. Cal stares at the floor, silent for a long, stoic moment. I never thought Maven would do that to her. He mutters finally. She probably didn't either. Then you're both stupid, my brain screams. How many times does one wicked boy have to betray you people before you learn?
Did you need something else, Cameron?
Colonel Farley asks. He rolls up the message, spooling it like a circle of thread. The rest is clearly not for my ears. It's about Corvium. Farley says it's on the edge. The colonel blinks.
Those were her words?
That's what I said. Suddenly, I'm no longer the focus of his attention. Instead, his eyes sweep to Cal.
Then it's time to push.
The colonel looks eager, but Cal could not seem more reluctant. He keeps still, knowing that any twitch might betray his true feelings. The lack of movement is just as damning.
I'll see what I can come up with,
he finally forces out. That seems to be enough for the colonel. He ducks his chin in a nod before turning his attention to Mayor's brothers.
Best let your family know,
he says, putting on a show of being gentle.
And Killorn.
I shift, uncomfortable watching them digest the painful news of their sister and accept the burden of carrying it to the rest of their family. Bree's words stick, but Traymi has strength enough to speak for his older brother.
Yes, sir,
he replies, though I don't know where Warren gets to these days. Try the new blood barracks, I offer. He's there more often than not. Indeed, Killorn spends most of his time with Ada. After Kefa died, Ada took on the arduous task of teaching him to read and write, though I suspect he sticks with us because he has no one else. The Barrows are the closest thing he has to family, and they are a family of ghosts now, haunted by memories. I've never even seen her parents. They keep to themselves, deep in the tunnels. We take our leave of the colonel together, four of us trooping out of the control room in awkward, stilted single file. Bree and Traymi peel away quickly, stomping their way toward their family's quarters on the other side of the base. I do not envy them. I remember how my mother screamed when my brother and I were taken away. I wonder what hurts more, to hear nothing of your children, knowing they are in danger, or to be fed news of their pain piece by piece. Not that I'll ever find out. There is no place for children, especially children of mine in this stupid, ruined world. I give Cal space, but quickly think better of it. We're nearly the same height, and catching up to his harried stride is no problem. If your heart's not in this, you're going to get a lot of people killed. He whirls, almost knocking me on my ass with the speed and force of his movement. I have seen his fire firsthand, but never so strongly as the flame blazing in his eyes.
Cameron, my heart is quite literally in this.
He hisses through gritted teeth. Swooning words, a romantic declaration. I can barely stop my eyes from rolling.
Save it for when we get her back, I grumble. When, not if.
He nearly set the control room on fire when the colonel denied his request to explore ways to get messages to Mayor within the palace. I don't need him melting the hallway over a poor choice of words. He starts walking again, his pace doubled. But I'm not as easily left behind as the Lightning Girl.
I just mean to say that the colonel has strategists of his own. People at command. Scarlet Guard officers who don't have...
I search for the proper term. Conflicting allegiances. Cal huffs loudly,
his broad shoulders rising and falling. Clearly, any etiquette lessons he may have had took a backseat to military training. Show me an officer who knows as much as I do about silver protocols and the Corvium defense system, and I'll gladly step back from this mess. I'm sure there's someone, Kalor. Who's fought with new bloods? Knows your abilities? Knows how best to use you in a fight? I bristle at his tone. Use, I spit. Use indeed. I remember those of us who didn't survive Koros. New bloods recruited by Mare Barrow. New bloods she promised to protect. Instead, Mare and Cal threw us into a battle we were not prepared for, and it became clear Mare couldn't even protect herself. Nix, Gareth, Ketha, and others from the prison I didn't even know. Dozens dead, discarded like pieces on a game board. That's how it's always worked with the Silver Masters, and that's how Cal was taught to fight. Win at all costs. Pay for every inch in red blood. You know what I mean. I snort. Maybe that's why I'm not exactly confident. Harsh, Cameron. Listen, I continue, switching tactics. I know I'd burn everyone here if it meant getting my brother back. And luckily, that's not a decision I have to make. But you actually have that option. I want to make sure you don't take it. It's true. We're here for the same reason. Not blind obedience to the Scarlet Guard, but because they are our only hope of saving the ones we love and lost. Cal quirks a crooked smile, the same one I've seen Mare moon over. It makes him look like more of a fool. Don't try to sweet-talk me, Cameron. I'm doing everything I can to keep us out of another massacre. Everything. His expression turns harsh. You think it's just Silvers who care only about victory? He mutters. I've seen the Colonel's reports. I've seen correspondence with command. I've heard things. You're embedded with people who think exactly the same way. They'll burn all of us to get what they want. Maybe true, I think, but at least what they want is justice. I think of Farley, the Colonel, the oathed soldiers of the Scarlet Guard, and the red refugees they protect. I've seen them ferry people across the border with my own eyes. I sat on one of their air jets as it screamed toward the choke, intent on rescuing a legion of child soldiers. They have objectives with high costs, but they are not silver. They kill, but not without reason. The Scarlet Guard are not peaceful, but peace has no place in this conflict. No matter what Cal might think of their methods and their secrecy, theirs is the only way anyone can hope to fight Silvers and win. Cal's people brought this upon themselves. If you're so worried about Corvium, don't go, he says with a forced shrug. And miss the chance to paint my hands in silver blood? I snap at him. I don't know if I'm making a poor attempt to joke or threatening him outright. My patience has worn through yet again. I already had to deal with the whining of a walking lightning rod. I'm not going to tolerate the attitude of a mopey matchstick prince. Again, his eyes blaze with anger and heat. I wonder if I'm fast enough with my ability to incapacitate him. What a fight that would be. Fire against silence. Would he burn or would I? Funny thing, you telling me not to be careless with human life. I remember you doing everything you could to kill back in the prison. A prison where I was kept, starved, neglected, forced to watch the people around me wither and die because they were born wrong. And even before I entered Koros, I was a prisoner of another jail. I am a daughter of Newtown, conscripted to a different army since the day I was born, doomed to live my life in shadow and ash at the mercy of the shift whistle and the factory schedule. Of course I tried to kill the ones who held me captive. I would do it again if given the choice. "Proud of it," I tell him, setting my jaw. He despairs of me. That much is clear. Good. There's no amount of speech-making that will ever sway me to his thinking. I doubt anyone else will listen much either. Cal is a prince of Norda. Exiled, yes, but different from us in every way. His ability is to be used as much as mine, but he is a barely tolerated weapon. His words can only travel so far, and even then they fall on deaf ears, mine especially. Without warning, he sets off down a smaller passage, one of the many burrowing through the warren of Irabel. It branches off from the wider hall, angling upward to the surface in a gentle slope. I let him go, puzzled. There's nothing in that direction. Just empty passages, abandoned, unused. Yet something tugs. "I've heard things," he said. Suspicion flares in my chest as he walks away, his broad form getting smaller by the second. For a moment, I hesitate. Cal is not my friend. We're barely on the same side. But he is nothing if not annoyingly noble. He won't hurt me. So I follow. The corridor is obviously unused, cluttered with scraps and dark in places where the light bulbs are burned out. Even from a distance, Cal's presence warms the close air with every passing second. It's actually a comfortable temperature, and I make a mental note to speak with a few other escaped techies. Maybe we can figure out a way to warm up the lower passages using pressurized air. My eyes trail the cabled wires along the ceiling, counting them. More there than there should be to feed a few light bulbs. I hang back, watching as Cal shoulders some wood pallets and scrap metal from a wall. He reveals a door beneath, with the cables running overhead and into whatever room it hides. When he disappears, pulling the door shut behind him, I dare to get a little closer. The tangle of cables comes into sharper focus. Radio array. Now I see it. Clear as the nose on my bleeding face. The telltale braid of black wires, that means the room inside has the ability to communicate beyond the walls of Irabel. But who could he possibly be communicating with? My first instinct is to tell Farley or Killorn. But then, if Cal thinks that whatever he's doing will keep me and 1,000 others from a suicide attack on Corvium, I should let him continue, and hope I don't regret it.
5. Mayor. I drift on a dark sea, and shadows drift with me. They could be memories, they could be dreams, familiar but strange, and something wrong with each. Cal's eyes are shot with silver, bleeding hot, smoking blood. My brother's face looks more skeleton than flesh. Dad gets out of his wheelchair, but his new legs are spindle-thin, knobbled, ready to splinter with every shaking step. Gisa has metal pins in both hands, and her mouth is sewn shut. Killorn drowns in the river, tangled in his perfect nets. Red rags spill from Farley's slit throat. Cameron claws at her own neck, struggling to speak, trapped in a silence of her own making. Metal scales shudder over Evangeline's skin, swallowing her whole. And Maven slumps on his odd throne, letting it tighten and consume him until he is stone himself, a seated statue with sapphire eyes and diamond tears. purple eats at the edge of my vision. I try to turn into its embrace, knowing what it holds. My lightning is so close. If only I could find the memory of it and taste one last drop of power before plunging back into darkness. But it fades like the rest, ebbing away. I expect to feel cold as the darkness presses in. Instead, heat rises. Maven is suddenly too close to bear. Blue eyes, black hair, pale as a dead man. His hand hovers inches from my cheek. It trembles, wanting to touch, wanting to pull away. I don't know which I would prefer. I think I sleep. Darkness and light trade places, stretching back and forth. I try to move, but my limbs are too heavy. The work of manacles or guards or both. They weigh me down worse than before, and the terrible visions are the only escape. I chase what matters most. Shade, Gisa, the rest of my family, Cal, Killorn, Lightning. But they always dance out of my grip, or flicker to nothing when I reach them. Another torture, I suppose. Samson's way of running me ragged, even as I sleep. Maven is there, too, but I never go to him, and he never moves. Always sitting, always staring. One hand on his temple, massaging an ache. I never see him blink. Years or seconds pass. The pressure dulls, my mind sharpens. Whatever fog held me captive recedes, burning off. I am allowed to wake up. I feel thirsty, bled dry by bitter tears I do not remember shedding. The crushing weight of silence hangs heavy, as always. For a moment it's too difficult to breathe, and I wonder if this is how I die. Drowned in this bed of silk, burned by a king's obsession, smothered by open air. I'm back in my prison bedchamber. Maybe I've been here the entire time. The white light streaming from the windows tells me it has snowed again, and the world outside is bright winter. When my sight adjusts to it, letting the room come into clearer focus, I risk looking around, flashing my eyes left and right, not moving more than I have to. Not that it matters. The Arvins stand guard at the four corners of my bed, each one staring down. Kitten, Clover, Trio, and Egg. They exchange glances with one another as I blink up at them. Samson is nowhere I can see, though I expect him to loom over me with a malicious smile and a snappy welcome. Instead, a small woman in plain clothes, with flawless blue-black skin like a polished gem, stands at the foot of my bed. I don't know her face, but there's something familiar about her features. Then I realize what I thought were manacles were actually hands. Hers, each one tight around an ankle, soothing against my skin and the bones beneath. I recognize her colors. Red and silver crossed on her shoulders, representing both kinds of blood. Healer. Skin healer. She's of House Skonos. The sensation I feel from her touch is healing me, or at least keeping me alive against the onslaught of four pillars of silence. Their pressure must be enough to kill me, if not for a healer. A delicate balance, to be sure. She must be very talented. She has the same eyes as Sarah. Bright, dark gray, expressive. But she isn't looking at me. Her eyes, instead, are on something to my right. I flinch when I follow her gaze. Maven sits as I dreamed him, still, focused, one hand on his temple, the other hand waves in silent order. And then there really are manacles. The guards move quickly, fastening strange braided metal studded with smoothly polished orbs around my ankles and wrists. They lock each one with a single key. I try to follow the key's path, but in my daze, it flickers in and out of focus. Only the manacles stand out. They feel heavy and cold. I expect one more, a new collar to mark my neck, but my neck is left blissfully bare. The jeweled thorns don't come back. To my eternal surprise, the healer and the guards take their leave of me, walking from the room. I watch them go in confusion, trying to hide the sudden leap of excitement sending my pulse into overdrive. Is everyone really this stupid? Will they leave me alone with Maven? Does he think I won't try to kill him in a heartbeat? I turn to him, trying to get out of bed, trying to move. But anything faster than sitting up feels impossible, as if my very blood has turned to lead. I quickly